Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Star Fuentes is a master intuitive healer and spiritual teacher and has been a pioneering student of metaphysics for over 50 years. She has learned lifetimes of priceless information from her years of seeking out and living with indigenous healers and shamans around the world. Visit her website at www.starfuentes.com and then join her here every Wednesday night on Spiritual Connections Radio as she shares her knowledge with you. And now, Star Fuentes.
Welcome. After the half hour, we'll be taking callers. The number is 646-716-9663. Today, I am pleased to have with us Christopher Penzack. Am I saying that last name right, Christopher?
You are saying it right. Thank you.
Well, my first question to you is, how did you get started on your path, and what is your path?
My path, I consider myself a modern witch, and a lot of the things that, you know, were spoken about in your biography in terms of healing and you know, doing spiritual work with others, I really see that as part of the European shamanic tradition. So, you know, we've really been, the label or the image that has really become a part of our tradition has been the witch, for good or for bad. And so a lot of my work has been about trying to dismiss a lot of the stereotypes and a lot of the fears that go around with that word witch. And strangely enough, I came to it all as a total skeptic. I had a friend that was really involved in this, and I went to Catholic school all my life, and she was my mentor and my art teacher kind of growing up, and an older woman who was really, you know, a great friend and mentor in terms of life. And once I graduated high school, she started dropping little hints about her interests in witchcraft and magic. And at the time, I thought it was very artistic because we both had an artistic flair. And as time went on, she really kind of explained to me, and then finally she dropped the W word on me. And said, you know, well, of course, you figured out by now I'm a witch. And I was like, I thought she was kidding. I thought she was, you know, being funny and making a joke, because I didn't think there was actually real witches out there at the time. And she wasn't joking. She ended up inviting me to her coven and teaching me some meditation and teaching me how to read tarot cards. And she used to run psychic fairs, and she would have me do readings at the psychic fairs as one of the readers, once she taught me. And it all kind of spiraled out, and she got me to a point where she felt my questions were a little too deep for what she could help me with, and she brought me to her teacher. Her teacher was a woman in Salem, Massachusetts, named Bori Cabot, who's considered to be the official witch in Salem, and she has her own tradition, and the Cabot tradition of witchcraft. And just like in different religious traditions, there's lines of lineages. That's the lineage that she started. And she started teaching me. And so, you know, we had a relationship where she would teach her classes, and I got to know witchcraft through her community and her classes. And from that point, I just kind of spiraled out into holistic health. And I really was interested in the intersection of witchcraft and magic with herbalism. So I started studying with herbalists and flower essence practitioners. And I really loved the healing aspect of witchcraft. So I started getting into Reiki and other forms of energy work. And I felt a big chunk of what we do is lost, and so I started looking at core shamanic practices like those from the Michael Harner Institute to see, you know, where that would intersect. And my own research and my own practices have kind of really focused on the idea of witchcraft as a form of European shamanism.
It definitely is more secular the way that I'm seeing you do it, and well-rounded. Witchcraft is very, very powerful, and then, of course, just like everything else, it's what intention you have with that that makes it good or not so good. Wow, you have a great number of books. And how many books do you have?
I think we're on 24 at the moment. I'm working on a couple now, so it's hard to keep track.
And if I was to purchase your books, what would the website be that I'd go to buy your books?
Yeah, if you want to buy them directly from my shop, it's just my name, ChristopherPenzack.com. And we have a whole web store, and I send out signed books to people personally. And otherwise, they're available at, you know, local metaphysical stores and Barnes & Noble and Amazon and all that. But if you'd like a signed book, you can always get it through my website, ChristopherPenzack.com.
And how do you spell that last name, just for clarity's sake?
It's a hard one. It's P-E-N, C as in cat, Z as in zebra, A-K.
Well, good. So tell us about your greatest surprises. Your great, when you learn something simple or something big, what have you been your greatest surprises along the spiritual path?
I would think the effectiveness of magic was really huge. I've had a couple experiences starting out, and even to this day, you know, I'm still a skeptic at heart. I still like to be shown. I still like to understand the why behind everything. And I would even say, you know, probably my first one was an experience with psychic healing. My teacher, Lori, her big test in the work is to basically get the name of somebody who's got a diagnosed medical illness that needs healing, but you don't know what the illness is. You don't know anything about the person other than their name, their age, and their location. And through using psychic techniques to be able to connect to them, describe them physically, describe what their illness is and where it is in the body, and have it verified. That was huge for me. It was like an amazing shock. I think quite literally it was what blew my mind and really got me interested in going further in the craft. Because I think when I started out, I thought, okay, there's no real such thing as psychic and magical powers. And then I saw my teachers do it. And I said, okay, they can do it. They're special. They've got training. I couldn't do it. And then to go through it all and to be able to do it myself, that was just a huge shock. And it really showed me that magic is the birthright of everyone. Everyone can have magical experiences. You don't have to be particularly talented. It's not like Harry Potter where you have to be this, you know, prophesized one and, you know, special and belonging to a special group of people. Anybody who has a desire to learn magic can do it. Some people are more talented than others, but you don't necessarily, you know, have to have a talented background. You know, my background before this was music. And I would say I was a good musician, but I wasn't a great musician. I didn't have a lot of natural talent, yet I got a degree in music because I practiced real hard and I played real hard and I was very passionate about it. I think anybody who's very passionate about magic can learn to do it.
Well, you still have to practice and you still have to, I mean, anyone can do magic, but you have to practice and you have to learn. And,
absolutely.
You know, and you have to be in the presence usually of someone who's already learned. And when we talk about everybody can do magic, I'm going to tell you, those little football players down at my local high school, they're probably not that interested.
Probably.
Probably not ever going to, down south where I am, they're probably not ever going to learn magic. Everybody can do it, but you're going to have to want.
Although I did have a teacher who said that, you know, she defined magic as every thought we think, every word we speak, and every action we take is magic. The only difference between the witches and the shamans and the magicians and everybody else is that we know it. So I think people are casting spells on themselves all the time. They just don't realize that's what they're doing. And what a good magician tries to do is get conscious about it.
I have an interesting scenario. And I've been in the business now 50-some years. I'm 76 years old, and I've been doing this. So I've seen all sorts of things. I have seen things that are unseeable. And people come to me, and they say stuff to me, "Star, somebody cursed me. Ever since this and this day, my job isn't good, my family isn't good, my house isn't good." And sometimes I find that they're the one that cursed themselves.
Absolutely.
Have you found that also?
Absolutely. I will have to say, you know, being a professional public witch and running a temple of witchcraft, we probably get an email like this, either me personally or to the temple itself, at least every 2 or 3 weeks. And, you know, thankfully there's now other high priestesses and priests and ministers and witches that can help us out with that. But, you know, a lot of it is that person's own perception. Not to say curses aren't real. They can be very real, but they're a lot rarer than a lot of people think because, you know, it takes you having to cross somebody who both has the magical knowledge and the lack of ethics that they want to curse you for it, you know, particularly if it's, you know, not a life and death infraction type of thing. Most people who think they're cursed, who've had bad luck, who've had difficulties, have really created that or attracted it on their own, whether it be in this lifetime or another lifetime. And there's spiritual cleansing you can do and there's healing work you can do, but it's really about being conscious. We had a friend and a student who was just very, very negative about everything. Even though when she graduated through a lot of the classes and training and had a lot of knowledge, she was still very negative about everything. If there was a bad way to look at something, you know, it was happening. And over time, you know, everything started to be blamed on entities that were attacking her and other witches that were cursing her. And so then she felt whoever she thought was doing a curse against her, she'd have to do a curse against them. And it just got exhausting and kind of silly and difficult. And I think in the end, she was her worst enemy because she couldn't see that. I don't think it ever really gotten any better.
Yeah, and that happens, and I think most people are unconscious how powerful vows are.
Absolutely.
And when you say, "I'll never love again," because somebody breaks your heart and you're 22 years old, and you say that and intend that, and you're 40 years old and going, "Why don't I have a mate?" Because your spirit, your soul, the energies around you, they're usually yes energy. So if you say, "I never will love again," And the energies will be saying, yes, we'll help you keep that.
Right.
And so you have to go back and look at your vows. And unfortunately, there are very strong vows. Like, I will be the wife of Jesus forever and ever. Amen. You were a nun 7 lifetimes ago. You know, you have to clear that vow, because forever and ever means body after body. And so sometimes it's your own vows that get in your way. And learning about magic, learning about the craft, or whatever it may be, you will become conscious of the very thoughts and things you have done that create what used to be a protection is now a stress for you.
Yeah, a lot of people forget that magic is called spelling for a reason. You know, it's the power of language, it's the power of intent with that language, and so many people throw away their words thinking that they're not powerful, and the universe takes you seriously when you say something, and particularly when you say, I'll never do this or I'll always do that, it really listens and creates these blocks, and what was appropriate in your lifetime when you were a nun, you know, is not. You might have learned a lot of amazing things for your soul at that time, but it's not necessarily what's good for you now in this lifetime. So it's hard for people to realize that. A big part of our training, and we've got a system of 5 degrees, and the 3rd degree has a big section on reviewing your vows and, you know, both this lifetime and past lifetime and renouncing them, you know, really trying to only accept what is appropriate for you at this moment and no more, no less.
And, you know, it's really funny because I look around my classes and I have people who are vegans, vegetarians, macrobiotics and everything. And first thing I tell them, I want you to be as careful as what comes out of your mouth as you are what you put into it.
Your mouth.
And
mm-hmm.
They look at me and they're like, oh, what do you mean? You know, and I go, well, here's what I mean. You got a year to study. This is what I mean. And it's really, really amazing how much power you have over yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really, really important. I imagine, I don't see it here, but I imagine you do private sessions, correct?
I do, yep. I have a practice. I live in Salem, New Hampshire. And mm-hmm. most of my practice is in person, although I do sometimes have phone sessions and readings with people. Mostly on the phone is readings and flower essence consultations, and in person I do more shamanic work with the readings. But yeah, I'm definitely available for people. I think that's part of the job of the witch. It's kind of like the cunning man or the cunning woman at the edge of the village. And you know, you're the person, whether you use the word witch or not, I mean, as you know, spiritual healers and shamans and all those, whatever you want to call it, we're the ones people go to when they have difficulties that the traditional modern scientific world can't help them with or the psychologist can't help them with. And, you know, sometimes it's about us helping them accept what is and transitioning to what's next. And sometimes, you know, some really amazing things can happen when people are ready to change. So I think we have to be available for that.
I think you're correct. What are some of the more powerful things that have happened along your path? And also, I'm always interested in the strangest things. So let's start with, what are some of the more powerful things that have happened in your path?
I would say one of the most powerful healing sessions that I did that really just kind of surprised me with its verification. There was a gentleman, and he and his wife came to me for actually a crystal class. I was teaching a class in crystal magic, and I don't think they understood that I was a witch presenting it. And so we had a good class, and I didn't see them for a while, and then I got a call from them saying that the husband was in the hospital, and would you please come down? Now, in my mind, when she described the whole situation, I thought she was calling me for last rites as a priest. But she was calling me as a crystal healer to come and try to pull out like a last-ditch miracle. And so it's very etched in my mind because it was the week of September 11th when all this was happening. That whole week of September 11th of the towers falling. And so I'm in the hospital and there's all kind of crazy news in the background. And we're doing a healing. And I realized, you know, they see me coming with the pentacle and wearing black as a, you know, a minister would. They were kind of surprised by that. We talked about it and moved through it, and I said I would do some shamanic, some magical healing on him. And it was a very unusual healing session for me. I don't do a lot of, we would call it overshadowing. Some people would think of it as possession, but it's really when you merge with your inner master teacher. And so yeah. I really felt that presence come through, and the master teacher was really the one who was doing the work, not me. I was just the physical vessel for it. And this particular, the gentleman who I was helping with, his body was riddled with cancer. He had all sorts of difficulties. It was definitely a terminal situation at that point. But he also had an obstruction of his bowel that was causing complications that they couldn't do a surgery on him to make him more comfortable. And so we focused on the pain in his bowel. And so after the healing session, he was feeling really good, and that often happens with energetic healing. And then come to find out, they were going to do the surgery to remove the obstruction. They did his final checkup, they did his final test, his final scan, and it was gone. And it was gone so much so that the doctors were flabbergasted by it, and they talked to the family, and then the family was like, I know this is going to sound crazy, but we had a witch come in, and he performed the healing on him. And so from that point on, the part that really blew me away is that the doctor and the medical team wanted to consult with me when they were going to do further medical treatment. And I had to explain to them, I'm here for the spiritual treatment, and that can be a byproduct, but make your medical decisions on your medical reasons, and I'll support spiritually what I can do spiritually. But to have a doctor who was really kind of against all this be like, oh, yeah, we're going to consult with the witch, that blew me away, to have such a physical change and to have such an unusual healing session. That was probably one of the most powerful sessions I've been involved in, because it had such a physical result.
Wow, that sounds good. Before I talk to you about your strangers, I want to say, I live in Hot Springs, Arkansas, and we have a mine here called the Mac Earl Mine. And the Mac Earl Mine had the finest crystals of all Hot Springs 35 years ago. And no crystals have come out of that mine for 30-some years, and just in December, they struck an incredible vein of crystals. Mm-hmm. And now the Mackerel Mine has crystals. And if you take a magnifying glass and you look on the crystals, you know how the record keeper looks, where it's a triangle?
Right, yep.
Well, you see dodecahedron, polyhedra on the surface of one of the faces or two of the faces of the crystals. And I've had 40 flats, but I live in a church, and I'll talk about interesting living. And I've had those 40 flats of crystals straight from the Mackerel Mine. I'm having a conference this weekend, brought into my church, and I tell you, the amazing energies and strange-looking objects in the air with it. So people pay attention. The Mackerel crystals are out there, and you can find online from MIT. Crystals were sent to MIT. You can see the sacred geometries on it, and I do have some of those for sale. Now, I want to ask you again, what is your website, Christopher?
It's ChristopherPenzak.com, and it's PNCZAK. And it has all my classes. I travel the country. I sometimes do things in Europe, but mostly at the moment I'm in America. And it's got some articles in my web store and all that good stuff there.
And you have lots of books, and we'll get to them in a little bit. But I want to hear your strangest craft story.
My strangest. I think some of my strangest involves with people. You know, because I think witchcraft attracts some odd ducks and some strange people. And I would say that one of my strangest was, you know, somebody who I think of as the person who wasn't there. I remember being at a ritual space. It was a public ritual. And having somebody come up to me that was dressed as a gentleman that was dressed very, I would say, classic witchy, very occult in the kind of robe and cloak, and was carrying a cane and looking very mysterious and magical. And we had this really intense conversation the whole time. And I wasn't running the ritual. I was spending a lot of time. I had some friends there. And as I spoke to my other friends, you know, I talked about, oh, did you have a chance to talk to, I can't remember what his name was off the top of my head, but and they're like, who are you talking about? And I'd explain, you know, oh, this is the gentleman I was talking to. You had to see him. He was dressed out to the nines, and he looked like this, and he looked like that. And nobody else that I was with at that time had any idea who I was talking with, had saw him, heard him. When I looked back, I'm like, did he talk to anybody else? And, you know, as we talked about it, like, I really kind of questioned, was this a person physically tangible, or was he, you know, somebody that was an intangible spirit that I was having such a profound vision of? I think that was probably one of the weirdest experiences. And to this day, I really don't know if it was a flesh and blood person, or if it was somebody, you know, manifesting from a spirit world or a spirit teacher or just a curious spirit. I don't know if it was an illusion in my mind. I don't know if I was hallucinating in some way, but nobody else had any physical markers of him. And people saw me talking, and they said, oh, at one point somebody said, I thought you were talking to yourself. And I'm like, really? Like, because, you know, that's not like me. So it was interesting to try to suss that out. And we had a really great conversation. If you asked me what it was about today, I couldn't tell you the details of it, but I remember, like, at the time feeling like it was something important, or he was sharing something very insightful with me. But I don't know if he was flesh and blood or not. And that's usually, weird things like that don't happen to me. Usually I have a pretty good grasp on the the 3D world and what's a spirit encounter and what's a physical encounter, but that one I still don't know to this day.
Probably a spirit, and I'm going to take a look right now at it in one of your books called The Mighty Dead, and most healers get it, that they're like a drinking straw in the Coca-Cola of life and source, or their master teacher, or their whatever, their lineage, a whole,
right.
Is a person doing the work, and we're a vessel. Tell me a little bit about The Mighty Dead, and I guess this is your latest book, correct?
Yep, that is my latest book that I've put out. I put out another book since then that I wrote with my teacher, Lori, but that's the last book I put out myself. And The Mighty Dead is really kind of a witchcraft perspective on what others might call the ascended masters or the saints or the bodhisattvas. It's trying to look at what enlightenment looks like or what ascension looks like from a witch's perspective. So the book deals a lot with the concept of the witch's soul. In a lot of witchcraft traditions, we believe you have three parts to your soul and how those all work together and how they need to be kind of crafted together and have a harmony to be able to step out of the cycle of rebirth and reincarnation. And it talks about the history of different figures who could be amongst the Mighty Dead, could be amongst the saints of the witches. And it deals with different rituals and how to commune with them. And I think in the end, the masters, however you want to call them, are a collective consciousness. But I think we each have a different portal. Different traditions have a different portal to viewing them. So if you're Buddhist, you're going to see them as bodhisattvas. If you're Catholic or Christian, you might see them as saints. You know, if you're in the New Age traditions, you might see them as the Lords of Shambhala or the Ascended Masters of the Great White Brotherhood. And witches see them through the lens of the Mighty Dead and the Grand Sabbath of the witches. So I really wanted to flesh that out a lot more because it's something witches talk about, but there's not really been a lot written about it.
Well, that feels like it's a very informative and a good book to own and information that is very important to have in your own self. I'm from the very, very, very old school, and many, many times people come to me for exorcisms, and somehow, in some way, some shape, they have what I call, you know, they're time-sharing their body with an entity that doesn't have the body. So I've been doing exorcisms for 40, 50 years, and I find it really, really interesting how they pick these entities up. Do you have anything to say about that?
Yeah, I mean, in my practice, I tend to look at how the entity is latched. Well, first off, I guess, is the entity human consciousness or non-human consciousness? And then if it's non-human consciousness, you know, or even if it's human consciousness, usually it's the non-human consciousness, is this intentional and malicious, or is this accidental and the entity is kind of afraid of what's going on just as much as the person is? And then trying to figure out what is their entry point? How are they latched onto? Is it a specific chakra point? Is it a specific part of the aura? Are they just kind of, you know, sometimes they can be full possessions where they're in the body. There can be other kind of entities that are intruding upon the body that are causing obsessions or kind of blocking out other spiritual guidance. So it's trying to figure out where the latch point is, where they've kind of hooked themselves in, and then how do we help them unhook and exactly what would be the best thing for everybody. You know, some entities are just scared, so in some ways it's not even just an exorcism, but it's a healing for the entity as well as it's a healing for the person. And then other times it's a fight because the entity doesn't want to really go, and it's comfortable where it's at.
Yeah, well, it's a pretty interesting process in my history. I've noticed that there are years where there are dozens and dozens of people who are become conscious of their entities, and then there are some years go by, and the entities don't seem to be that active, or people don't notice them. And there's, you know, things go by in different decades. And recently, last 2 years, we had a lot of that going on. And after March, it has pretty much gotten very quiet. And I imagine that the spirit world, the disincarnate world, has its own seasons.
Yeah, I think there's definitely spiritual seasons. You know, I'm thinking about what you said right now, and I'm thinking that any type of entity work I've done has kind of gone in cycles as well. You know, I get a couple of them within a few months, and then I don't get them for a while, and then I'll get a couple. And yeah, it's interesting. I've never really tracked it out. I'd have to look back in my journals and see if there's a pattern I could recognize. But it does happen in little bunches. That's neat. Thank you for pointing that out.
All righty. So what do people ask you the most when people come to you for a session or to learn about crystals or to learn about shamanism or to learn about witchcraft? What are the questions they ask you the most?
I think the most for I would say lay people who are not yet trained or aren't sure if they want training but are just looking for help, the big three kind of happens to be about people asking about love, people asking about money, and people wanting some type of protection or feeling like that they're harmed in some way. And it's interesting because I think those are the classic things people go to a witch or a spiritual advisor for. You know, if every time you get asked, so if you're really psychic, can you get the winning numbers for the lottery and try to explain to them it doesn't quite work that way.
Everybody's going to win the lottery, $3.
Yeah.
At one point in time, everybody will win $3. And, it is a silly question. I get asked a lot about where is my mate? Can I just have $1 million without earning it? And the usual question is no. Yeah. You know, maybe 99% of the people it's no, and one person out of a million can win the lottery or something. And it's what all it is a focal point for them to want more. And what they don't realize is they want more to know more of their inner self, to know more inner strengths, to know more how energy works on this planet. And people want more cars, more men, more money, more whatever they want. That is what is in their conscious mind. What is in their conscious mind, unconscious, subconscious mind, is they need to know more about energy. They need to know more about life and themselves. And this is why people like you, me, and all of our friends exist, is to help people go inside and find their answers. We can give you a map, but we can't take the
trip. I often tell people, I'm like, I can open the door, but I'm not going to push you through it, nor am I going to carry you through it. I can just open the door. In any type of prosperity stuff, or when I get asked the millionaire lottery kind of questions, in witchcraft we've got a saying that people used to kind of sign off the letters instead of saying sincerely or truly, and it was 4 F's, and the 4 F's stood for flags, flax, fodder, and frig. And when I try to bring people back to the kind of material satisfaction, the material with their satisfaction with the bodies, the satisfaction with their lives, the flag stood for flagstones, and at the foundation of your home, you have a roof over your head. The flax dealt with the threads and the fibers. Do you have clothing on your body? Are you well taken care of in that way? The fodder related to food. Are you fed? Are your animals fed? Has everybody got enough in their belly? And the frig referred to love. Frigga was a goddess, a Saxon or Norse goddess of love. And kind of that, she's often equated with Freya, or some see her separately as the wife of the god Odin, but she was kind of motherhood, family, that kind of, you know, intangible wealth that we have with a good family. And so, you know, if you had food, if you had shelter over your head, if you had food in your belly, clothes on your body, you had good relationships in your life, loving relationships in your life, can you be satisfied with that? Can you find the satisfaction, the beauty, the love that's in that, rather than kind of constantly being consumed by the I want more, I want more, I want more? But a lot of people don't want to hear that. You know, they want that. If this is witchcraft, you know, I want the spell that's going to give me, you know, this instantly with no work. And people don't often realize witchcraft, true witchcraft, is about crafting yourself and crafting your awareness and crafting your connections.
And your energy, you know. And when people want more, they need more of themselves. They need to know the universal laws. They need to know what a mustard seed symbolizes. You know, they need to have an understanding that not only everything is here as a thing, it's here with a purposeful energy behind it. And you want more, you're going to have to learn more to be able to have the space to hold more in your life. And it usually starts with holding more knowledge or information. And that's important to remember. And we're just about ready to come up on our half hour break.
Alrighty.
You're listening to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Star Fuentes is a master intuitive healer and spiritual teacher and has been a pioneering student of metaphysics for over 50 years. She has learned lifetimes of priceless information from her years of seeking out and living with indigenous healers and shamans around the world. Visit her website at www.starfuentes.com and then join her here every Wednesday night on Spiritual Connections Radio as she shares her knowledge with you. Once again, Star Fuentes.
And remember that this weekend is the 12th Annual Light Language Conference held in Hot Springs, Arkansas. Get on my website, check it out, and drop on by. We have speakers from China and Israel and several different countries. All right, and we're here with Christopher Pencak, P-E-N-C-C-A-K. And you can get his books, his information, his CDs at his www.christopherpencak.com. Christopher, what do you want to say to people who are at that point in their life where they realize there is something more out there, that there is magic out there? They've had a few things happen to them where they thought of things and they happen, but they can't reproduce those things again. What do you have to say to the beginners out there?
Well, I think if they're serious beginners, one of the things I'd like to tell people is to, in whatever spiritual path it may be, is to dig a well. You know, I think a lot of people will take bits and pieces, but they won't really do much with it. And I think it does take practice. It does take discipline. It does take some type of mentorship, whether it be in person, online, or through a book. But you need some type of pattern to progress you. And I think people who are really serious, you know, I would say to take that discipline and that hard work to dig a well and strike water, you know, metaphorically. And once you feel that you've made a connection and you've got the techniques to use that connection, then you can kind of go exploring out and start integrating all sorts of other things into your path. But I think most people who are beginners who get frustrated early on, it's because they take a little here and a little there, and then they don't apply it. They just use it when they go to workshops. They just use it when they think that they need it, and then they find that they don't really have the skills. Like we talked about music before, I use the music analogy a lot. You want to be able to play an instrument, you got to practice every day. You got to study with somebody who can show you deeper things. You need to look at old music as you're trying to create new music, and all of that kind of comes together. And, you know, I had a teacher who said, as a composition teacher in music, to put notes on paper every day and to practice every day. And I think the same goes for witchcraft and shamanism and alchemy and magic. I think whatever your chosen path is, really kind of dig into it and get to really know it intimately. And then once you know it, you can kind of move on.
Great. And once of all, it's like cooking. And you may have two ingredients and think you know how to prepare that particular meal, but you might be missing the spices or the appropriate heat or something, so pay attention. Sean, do we have any callers?
We do. I have a Nancy on the line who has a question. Nancy, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Hi, Nancy.
Hello, Nancy.
Christopher, Hi. You go first. What's your question?
Yeah, now do you need my astrology information or...
No, just ask the question.
Okay, great. Yeah, now that I'm retired, I'm just curious. I would love to get into metaphysics or healing, and I want to see if you see that in my future.
Well, from the position of a magician, if you'd like to get into any type of this work, it's your will. I think the worst thing I could tell you right now is yes, absolutely, you can do this, or no, you can't. If you're going to get into healing, if you're going to get into metaphysics, you have to develop your will. Do you want to? Have you decided this is what you're going to do? And then if so, go forth and do it. Don't make it a question.
And my answer is, my, are you a great procrastinator? You've known for years that the spiritual path is something that you will welcome and will welcome you. Take the steps, make the commitments, sign up for those classes, finish reading those books, and yes, you can do this. Got it?
Got it.
All right. Thank you, Nancy.
Okay, thank you.
Bye, Nancy.
Bye-bye.
And, Sean, is there someone else? I didn't like that click.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think
we've We've got another call here. We have Trish on the line. Trish, are you there?
I am. Thank you. Hi, Trish. What's your question? Well, I own a piece of property that I'm considering developing and building a two-family home. But I've recently been offered money to buy me out, and I'm struggling with how to go with the right decision.
Christopher?
My gut of what's coming through for this is that if you're not absolutely anchored that this is the place for you, then this is not the place for you, and you should, you know, allow yourself to be bought out of this to find the place that's really calling to your soul. I think a land spirit someplace else is really speaking to you, not this one.
Okay,
and if this is an investment versus a home, that I would not let my partner buy me out, because this investment will be a better investment than what you're going to get for the money for what it is right now, okay?
Okay.
This is not some place you want to live, correct?
Well, I'm considering living there. That's the struggle for me.
That struggle is too much of a struggle. Obviously, you're not drawn enough to it. So pay attention, because one day you want it, one day you don't. Pay attention to the days you want it, what's going on, and the days you don't. And is this an investment or is this a home? Both, whether you have it or not, the question will be answered differently, okay?
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we're waiting, Sean.
All right. I have a few more calls to screen, so if you want to continue the conversation for a little bit, I should have some calls for you in just a moment.
Sure. We will. So, Christopher, what is the most important thing you want to tell our listening audience about life, living, magic, shamanism? What is the most important thing people need to know right now?
Well, I think the biggest thing for everybody, whether they identify as a witch or not, is that, kind of going back to that statement I said before, every thought you think, every word you speak, every action you take is a form of magic. And to try to be as clear as possible in understanding what that magic is that you're creating, even if you don't want to do rituals, even if you don't want to do spells, to realize that your words have power, and really focus in on your will. I think a lot of people are sometimes still looking for guidance, but in that guidance, they're expecting the guidance to make the decision for them. They want that easy road of tell me what to do. And for our tradition, we try to find a balance between the ideas of will, love, and wisdom. And the idea that the will is the magical will. It's not just what your personality wants, but it's what your soul wants. You know, can your soul figure out what's your purpose here? Like in the East, they call it your dharma. In witchcraft, we call it your will. But the idea of your soul has a unique thing to do in this lifetime that only you can do, nobody else can do it. And don't waste time on the petty stuff to not be able to do it. You know, figure what that is and go forth and do it. But you have to balance that out with love. You can't necessarily be in a place that you're so ruthless to get your soul's purpose done that you don't have empathy and you don't have regard for others. You don't have healing. It's not just about what you have to do, but it's about how do you do it in community? How do you do it in cooperation? How do you do it here on planet Earth with everybody else? So have that love, have that empathy, have that compassion. And then kind of knowing when to exercise the fulcrum that's almost like a scale and which side do you lean on, knowing which side to lean on in what moment is really your wisdom, is really taking all the knowledge that you've learned. And knowledge is great, but if you can't apply it in a way that's meaningful for you, then you've got to really be able to figure out, you know, what's your best judgment and understanding how to use the power, how to use that action, how to use that knowledge you've gained. There's a lot of people who have great magical knowledge but are armchair magicians. They never actually use it. And then there's a lot of people who, you know, kind of dive first in and don't have any knowledge to back it up. And so it's that balance between the two. You know, you really have to be able to know what you're doing, but you also have to be able to be willing to use it and use it in balance between your will and your love.
And I have a lot of people out there who have been as educated, and you have, and you know what positive thinking is, and you know what negative thinking is. And then I'm seeing many, many people out there who think positive 10%, think negative 2%, and then there's a whole bunch of time you're not using thought to create your reality. You're not staying in your body. You're not present on Earth. And when you are present on Earth, What magic are you making? Are you judging the neighbors? Are you saying prayers for people, blessing other people? Are you healing people? Or are you watching TV? Pay attention to what you use your energy. How are we doing there, Sean?
We are good. I have someone here may have a question ready. Let's see here. Stig, do you have a question for us?
Oh, sure. Hi. Hi, Star. Hi, Chris. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Great, Stig. I love you. What's your question?
Basically, I'm feeling really good. I just started rehearsing a new movie today. I love the people. It went great. We have to get a lawyer to put a curb on the harsh increases that the landlord is trying to impose on us. And I would just like any information I can get about that.
And you live in New York City, so Chris would know that a little better. And his history is that the landlord's trying to break the lease and raise the rent, et cetera, et cetera.
And charge us an enormous amount of money for capital improvements, which were not done in any of our apartments.
Okay, Chris, what do you have to say?
Well, what I would say is less of a reading and more of an act of magic. May I suggest a spell for you?
Excuse me?
You okay with that?
I'm sorry.
I said less than a reading and more of an act of magic. I'm going to suggest a spell for you, if that's okay.
Terrific. I'd love it.
I would take a blue candle, and if there's somebody in particular that is the person in charge of these things that are difficult for you. Blue is a Jupiterian energy. It helps create often win-win situations and allows other people to have benevolence towards each other and really see the other person's point of view. I would carve with either like a pin or, you know, a sharp edge where you won't hurt yourself, the name of that person who's going to be difficult for you it's causing these difficulties. And I would light this on a Thursday. Ideally, if you want to be really hardcore, I'd light it at sunrise on a Thursday because that'll be the hour of Jupiter on the day of Jupiter. And I would put out the intention as you hold the candle and then light it that this be resolved in a manner that is for the highest good of all involved, that doesn't cost you any money, that brings you the best possible outcome for you. And I have seen amazing things happen with just simple spells like that.
Terrific. Well, I would put the name of the manager since I don't know the actual people
involved. Right, because the manager makes the decisions.
Totally
yeah. I would put the name of the management company on, also the name of the municipal bureau, which will be hearing the case.
Okay.
Yep, all of that, fine. You can do it all in one big candle, and that'd be fine.
Yep.
Yep.
Wow.
And good luck, Stig, with the movies. And remember, every time you're in a movie, you're a prayer in action that people see over and over again every time they watch that movie. Now
I'm feeling great. I'll tell you, I just did a new acting workshop, and I brought all of that knowledge to rehearsal today, and it was such a wonderful experience and such a high that the love was enormous. I just love doing it so much.
I love you, Stig. Thank you.
I love you too, Star. Thank you, Chris.
You're quite welcome. Thank you for chatting.
You know, you have clients for 20, 30 years, and Stig's been one of them. He was a stand-up comedian for many years. He was on stage for 300 nights a year. And
oh, wow.
He went into the movie business, and he's probably done 200-300 movies, but he hasn't got what he wants, the leading role and the type of movie he wants. And I just have to say, he's taken hundreds of classes with people and everything, and he listens most of the time. And that's why he's so successful. When you get a session, when you go to somebody who is a practitioner, whatever it is they're practicing, pay attention. Listen to the advice you get. Do not dismiss it, because you already have an investment in this.
Absolutely. I remember in talking to another reader friend of mine who she used to offer different specials for people who are difficult and everything, and she gave a reading that was hard for somebody to hear, and then the person came back, you know, a couple of months later and said, you really should charge more for it. You're absolutely right, but, you know, I used all the money I saved on your discounted session to go pay for another session. The person told me exactly what I wanted to hear, but it turned out to be totally wrong. So, you know, it's sometimes the message is not always what people want to hear, but it's what they need to hear, and that can be hard.
Do you have somebody, Sean?
We have some very active listeners, but no questions. I think people are just absorbed
I have a story. I had a client call me every year on her birthday for 8 years, and I would tell her the same answers as the year before. On the ninth year, she called me. I said, did you listen to the tape of our session? She goes, no. Did you ever do anything I said? And she said, no. I says, great. Send me the money for this session and listen to our tapes. And she got so mad at me. But 9 years in a row, I told her the same information.
Right.
And people go and collect information and never do anything about it. You have to listen to where spirit takes you. And if spirit takes you to a reader or spirit takes you to a motivational tape or a speaker, listen to what is being said, because that is pertinent to you right then and there. Do not dismiss these energies. So I think that's
I was going to say, I'm always surprised when people record things, which I highly encourage, and then I find out they never listen to them.
Well, I've had people record things and nothing appears on the tape, too. So, or the DVD now, whatever CD it is, and you're like, oh, you guys, I talk to my spirit guides or their spirit guides. You really have to pay attention and remember now.
Yeah, they want it in the moment.
Well, we got some time here, so let's pick on another one of your books. You have so many of them.
Sure.
What other book would you like to talk about today?
Well, we can talk about Ascension Magic, might be good.
Okay, that's very up the line of many, many of my listeners.
Yeah, it was really my desire to kind of bridge the gap between the Ascension world and the lightworkers and the witches and the occultists, because I had a foot in both worlds. And I definitely had, you know, people who were my witchcraft friends who kind of looked at the New Age traditions as being very fluffy and not serious. And then I had a lot of my healer friends look at the witchcraft and be like, oh, that's dark and scary. Why are you doing that? And they didn't realize how much similarity and how much crossover and how much they're drawing from similar sources. So I wanted to write a really big book that was the book I wished I had if I was going into either of these things. Coming from the other perspective, I wish I had the book that explained all these things to me. Because when I first got involved in Ascension and light work, people threw around a lot of terms. And when I asked them to define them, they couldn't really define them really clearly. So I went around going a lot of times, well, what do they mean by that? What's a Merkaba? What's your light potion? What are the Ascended Masters? And people didn't really define it clearly. And so I wanted something that took it back to the roots. So we went back to Madame Blavatsky. We went back to Alice Bailey. We went back to Godfrey King. We looked at the stuff that they were based upon. And, you know, we talked about different forms of Tibetan Buddhism and European paganism, the Egyptian mystery schools and Hinduism, and try to see how it all kind of fits together to create what people think of as the New Age movement. And I'm really happy with it. My oldest editor at Llewellyn said that she thought it was my magnum opus and my best book ever, and she said she wished she had it. And so having somebody who's done that many books, it was really a great compliment to hear that from her.
I have that right over my secretary's desk. So the Ascension Magic, it's a very, very good book. I liked it, and it brought together several pieces of information that I had that sort of drifted off into nowhere, and it brought it together like a beautiful weaving. So the Ascension Magic is a great book. I highly recommend it also at Christopher, PENCZAK.com.
Yeah, and another place people, if they're looking for info for me, is I also run a temple, a nonprofit temple called the Temple of Witchcraft. And if you just look up templeofwitchcraft.org, one word, you can find out about our online mystery school, and you can find out about the festival in August called Temple Fest that I host, and all sorts of wonderful things that's going on in the larger community outside of my work. So it's just templeofwitchcraft.org.
I've had, oh God, maybe 20 apprentices, and fortunately, most of them lived with me, you know, because of the teachings I have. And I've had one apprentice who's been my apprentice for 23 years, but really she's a master now out there. Talk to me a little bit about your apprenticeships and how you offer that, and how could one participate in that?
Sure. We do both an online and an in-person school. So if you're local in New England, you can come out to the temple. And if you're not, then you can take it online. And our tradition has 5 degrees in it. Each one is based on one of the elements. So we go through fire, earth, water, air, and spirit. Each one takes about a year, except for spirit takes about 19 months. And through the little more than 5-year program, you can go through a different series of mystery training. So each level relates to what I consider to be one of the different mysteries. So the first level deals a lot with what we call the oracular mysteries, but it's a lot about psychic development, meditative development, body control, a lot of the inner work. And that's based on my Inner Temple of Witchcraft book. And then the second level is more of what most people think of as Wicca and witchcraft. It's the casting the circles and celebrating the seasons and the full moon, the spellcraft. And that's based on the Outer Temple of Witchcraft. And then the third and fourth degrees kind of swing from the very emotional, which is the third degree, and it's very shamanic and spirit-based and focuses on really getting in tune with your shadow. And then the fourth degree is really Kabbalistically based and is really focused on the idea of high magic and theurgy and where ceremonial magic and Kabbalah interface with witchcraft and folklore. And it's very intellectual, and the kind of test of it is you have to create your own map of reality. And then the fifth level itself is really about really learning the training to be a priest or priestess, learning more ministry work, learning to work more with the community, while at the same time keeping your own personal spiritual practice. And then if you get through all of that, then we have a training where people can, through service work and volunteer work, become ordained if they feel called to do that. But that's a step after that. So right now we've probably got 5 or 6 teachers of the program across the United States and several others that are interested in becoming it. We've probably got a good 25 or 30 high priests, high priestesses across the world that are doing this type of work or might have taken the training and gone on to do other things. And actively, we've probably got about 300 students in the school in the whole 5 levels. We do all 5 levels at once at different times. So you can go from 1 year and either go on to the next year right away, or you can take a year off if you want and go back to that. And we do a lot of continuing ed programs too. Like I'm teaching a class on the Wheel of the Year this year that's just the Wheel of the Year, and anybody can take it. They don't have to be a student in the temple. And we've got advanced training for ministers to do things like mediation training to be able to resolve conflicts and problems and communication skills and negotiations and things like that, and how to be a professional minister. So we talk about, you know, if you're going to be an independent minister, learning things like marketing and promotion and all that stuff that, you know, actually pays the bills so you can do the spiritual work.
That sounds very, very thorough and very intensive. Now, remember, all my classes are on MasterYourLight.com, free healing webinar every Tuesday at 5 Central, and a webinar on Thursday, services on Sunday at 10:30. Now, I'm going to give you a little reading, Christopher. Would you like that? Do I have permission to do that? Christopher, there is something coming for you in the TV world. There will be a tentative offer and then a more firm offer for you to participate in some type of TV series. This will come maybe not blindsided, maybe not out of the blue, but from a direction that is unexpected. You will go through considerable inner learning, deciding whether or not to take it. This is a very important pivot point in the next... okay, come on, give me number. Spirit guides say in the next 10 months, pay attention. Pay attention if somebody speaks about it that you don't know. Pay attention if somebody calls you in a call. They say, you know, we're screening people or we're wanting people to do this because this is a very important step for you. All right. Has that come up at all recently?
Not specifically in the tangible world, but you're the second intuitive person to tell me that. So that's a good thing to keep aware of. Thank you.
You're welcome. And thank you for being with us today. And we'll see you again next Wednesday.
Thank you so much for having me. Blessed be.
On behalf of Spiritual Connections Radio, thank you for listening to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Please join us again next week for another enlivening episode. For more information on Star's classes or services, visit her website at www.starfuentes.com or call the office at 501-609-0660. That's 501-609-0660. 609-0660.
Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was excellent. It was a great, great conversation. Really, really enjoyed having you on, and you're definitely a fresh sort of new perspective on her show. She's had a lot of people in the metaphysical community, and it's branched out in a little bit in the arts and things, but I think your perspective of coming from witchcraft was really kind of a cool thing to bring in, and brought in a lot of really, really interesting information that a chunk of our audience may not be too familiar with. So that was really excellent.
Cool. Well, thank you. If you guys ever want me on again, I know we space stuff out, but feel free to give me a call and I'd be happy to.
All right. Well, excellent. Well, thank you so much for being on again, and hope you have an awesome evening.
Thanks a lot. You too. Please tell Star I said goodbye, and I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.